From jet engines to space rockets, telephones to computers, the world has seen spectacular change in the last 100 years, and the pace of progress is getting faster and faster. From electric cars to the metaverse, drone deliveries to climate solutions and genetic sequencing, we're investing in the companies that are not just changing the world today, but are also shaping the future. The Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Invest in progress. Capital at risk.
Hello and welcome back to the Advice Show. I'm Julian Bovell, and today we're joined by Standard Life's Retirement Savings Director, Mike Ainbury. Mike, nice to see you.
Good to see you, Julian. Very well, thank you.
Great.
Thanks for being here.
No, thanks for joining us. So last week, Rachel Reeves delivered her maiden Mansion House speech with a strong view on pensions. What were your big takeaways from that?
I think it was probably described around the industry as a generational reform. I'd probably say there's a lot of information to take away from Mansion House. Mm. Certainly a load of headline topics to certainly absorb. We've probably spent a few days looking at it and working out what does it mean, certainly for DC schemes, LGPS and the future.
Yeah, the DC one, I suppose, was less forceful than the LGPS schemes, which we can come on to. What are your views around what she is looking to encourage with DC schemes? Is it if you don't consolidate, will force you to consolidate? Or what are your views on that?
Yeah, well, I think it's there in terms of investment review and consultation, and that's out there for a bit of a period, as you'd expect under UK legislation. So what do I think is quite clear is suggesting to get better outcomes for members, which is why we're running pension schemes, then you need to get to scale and size. Yeah. Scale and size somewhat between 25 billion and 50 billion, depends how you read the numbers and based upon the research. It's from Canada, it's from Australia, and the learnings and findings there of what in Australia is called mega schemes.
Yeah.
So if we get to a size and scale, does that enable investments in private assets, infrastructure and otherwise? So I think that purpose of consolidating the 30 plus schemes in Master Trust and providers of contract-based arrangements seem logical to gain consolidation and thus have the ability to invest in economies of scale.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk since this government came to power in early July about how they can get pension schemes to invest more in the UK. Both Australia and Canadian pension schemes invest a lot here. How can they do that through either incentivising or mandating investment?
So I think to me there's different methods of doing it. Does value for member actually do it? Does it give a performance table over investments for different schemes, whether it be master trust, contract or single occupational trust, to actually perform and to look at? If you have a performance table, then you could sort of encourage where and how to invest. Mm. Does it mandate? You don't need to mandate. I think the theory to me and my understanding, how I see it, would be consolidation and getting size and scale enables investment in certain areas of industry that only those of scale and mass can do right now. I'm fortunate enough with Phoenix Group, we have the scale and mass.
Yeah.
But for those much smaller single occupational trusts, can they invest in private markets, in those assets, and at value and at scale to be able to facilitate that? So I sort of feel where the Chancellor's going to is very logical to drive what we see in other countries as mega schemes, that consolidation. That consolidation enables the power for those investments. Do you need to mandate? You don't need to mandate if you achieve that scale. Mm. I thus then ask the question, at scale, what are the sort of investment media that can be looked at for at scale sort of schemes?
Yeah.
And I'd say infrastructure, investment, energy, defence. There's very clear areas where the UK is growing, making those opportune for investment for pension schemes, pension funds to invest in is exactly the right thing. Pension funds should be investing in the long term. Mm. We absolutely should be looking in terms of infrastructure, energy demands, dare I say it, defence.
Yeah.
We should be investing those over the long term because the payback from those, given the right returns, should pay back people that are investing for 10, 20, 30, 40 years into retirement. So the question of whether mandating comes in should and could only occur if we don't get consolidation. And it should be around what's the better outcome for customers.
Advisors and trustees, I suppose, have been quite strong in their criticism of the government, saying that ultimately this isn't their money, this is the members' money, and at the moment at least the safer bet is abroad. What would you respond to that, or what would you expect the government to respond to that?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily think that's the case. I think, you know, high quality advisors can and do find opportunity in all spaces.
Phoenix Group's allocation is quite high in the UK, for instance.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd expect that it's given what's the opportunity, whether that's in the UK and or overseas. We do need a diverse portfolio. Clearly there's advisors and trustees that will have opinions to say these are the opportunities that give us the performance that we need in order to give that back to our customers and otherwise. I question with where the UK is going to. The theory there is Labour want to be the fastest growing G7 economy. To be able to do that, we need investment in the UK.
Yeah.
That investment then needs to give a level of return.
Yeah.
I sit on the optimistic side of that fence, to say if we invest in the UK, we should give a level of return. So whilst I do appreciate and we should be investing overseas, I think there is an opportunity at this time with the economic growth that the Chancellor has set out to follow that through.
Yeah, and how do the government's plans, I suppose, laid out in Mansion House tally with the FCA's work on value for money released sort of a month and a half, 2 months ago now, with the traffic light system?
I think it works, but there's a question for me of whether it's punchy enough. Does value for member go far enough with these other measures that are coming in of consolidation, economies of scale? Traffic lights seems to be okay, but it's not as punchy as what came out through Mansion House, i.e. 25 bill, 50 bill, if you're not at those markers. And I reflect, in Australia, they did exactly the same thing. Mm. If you're not at $25 billion Australian, then really you can't perform, you can't invest in areas which give outcomes and value back to your members. Yeah. Do I think VFM actually does that? There's a couple of other bits in VFM that I think may or may not work out, whether performance being backward looking as opposed to future looking with certain asset classes.
That challenge with the risk thing that the government are meant talking about.
Exactly that. So in a way, I think the overlay from Mansion House and Future Pensions Bill and this consultation on investment review does layer that approach to say that's one level, but we need to look at a few other levels that have come forward. There's a question there of how much more power the Chancellor gives to regulators. To enable to enforce that. I believe the regulators do a great job, but you need the power to do an even greater job to sort of follow through on those principles.
Yeah, and what do you make of their sort of directive that these funds need to be managed by proper investment managers and they need to be managed correctly and they need to take enough risk for their members?
Yeah, I think it's appropriate. You do need to take a level of risk. We'll have advisors, we'll have asset managers sort of tuning in. I'd expect them to say it is about research, it's about understanding the asset class, it's about understanding the investment, and the attitude to risk versus level of return need to equate to certain parameters. So I think it's logical. Do need to take a level of risk, but some of the comparisons that we had in July 23 were more a comparison of what's bonds return versus other asset classes. So I think we can be a little bit more risky, notwithstanding volatility, we could be a little bit more risky than what bonds are into different asset classes, private markets, private solutions, etc. We sit in the UK, if I pick the UK, but we could pick overseas private asset classes at a really good time. Science, technology investments, really growing area for the UK, AI, etc. These are great industries
like
for the UK.
Cambridge and stuff like 100%. That.
Cambridge, Oxford, and I'll go overseas, I'll go to Brisbane. These are clear areas of asset growth that wouldn't be areas where you say are not risky, but can give the level of return with certain levels of backing.
Yeah. Where the government, I suppose, would be more trying to be produce more enforcement is around the LGPS schemes. There are currently 86 and they want to merge them into 8 by March 2026, I think. This has met criticism, particularly the Chelsea and Kensington trustee has said that this is going to produce more risk and won't work for members. What are your thoughts around that?
Well, there's a couple of things. I think Kensington and Chelsea are one of the highest performing
They
funds.
Are the highest over the last 5 years.
And so they sit in a really good position, and I'm not knocking them at all. If I was sitting at the top of a league table looking down on my performance, I'd probably
Manchester
say...
City of the
Manchester funds, yeah. City of the pension. I'd probably look around and just say, we're okay. But then I'd probably say Kensington and Chelsea... help others out. Yeah. You know, if you pull those assets, if you're able to work together to take some of the opportunities, then maybe it's easier to be able to do that. Yeah. I do think it's the same principles, scale, good areas to invest in, and the consolidation and the pooled funds do enable that. Should we trust in fund managers and advisors to be able to deliver that on those mechanisms? Yes. The one thing I'll point out, which you'll probably say, 2026, it's a little bit punchy.
Is that too punchy?
It seems quite near. Other consultancies around the industry have said that's quite quick to achieve these endeavours. Cadence is a good thing.
Yeah.
Do we need to wait? Do we need to wait for more than a couple of years? Seems something to aim for, yeah. Whether that infrastructure can be in place in that period of time.
A criticism of the UK, though, and this is what the government will say, is that they want to tear, and this is what they've shown, they want to tear down sort of the regulatory framework in terms of infrastructure and building things. The UK has had massive problems over the last 20 years in terms of building things. You see that with HS2. Is that something that they want to change?
I think it comes with a whole host of measures for me. Sort of the fiscal change has to come in part with some sort of regulatory change, whether it's on infrastructure, it's on housing, it's on energy. All of those things need to change. Offshore, onshore wind farms. Yeah. Until this government came in, you know, onshore wind farms, fine. Offshore wind farms, certain measures. Yeah. So it does need to work with certain areas. And that's the Crown Estate. Probably easier for the government to work with the Crown Estate than anybody
more
else.
More so than us, yeah.
But yeah, it does need regulatory change. I'll go to energy and otherwise. Nuclear reactors, Sizewell C, investment in that would need sort of a responsibility around sustainable investment. What's the level of return that can be given on that? And equally, if I'm investing in that, what's the risks associated with nuclear fuels, spent nuclear fission, etc., etc.? So I do think there's certain levels of regulation that mean investment can occur, and equally what the level of that return on that investment should and could be.
Yeah, you mentioned Australia in your, speaking about pensions there, you spent quite a lot of time there over the last few months as part of Standard Life's delegation going over there and working with Treasury and etc. What lessons do you think we can learn from Australia? It's taken them a long time to get to the stage where they're at. Is it going to take the UK 30 years as well? Or?
Yeah, there's a few things to unpick from Australia. I think there's good principles in terms of adequacy, first off. What's the level of pension contribution? We can talk through that in terms of future pensions bill as well. Will that be pensions?
Stage two of the review.
Stage two, as we assume it is. When do we increase contributions from the 8% total now to something more meaningful that would give a level of outcome and return and, dare I say, adequacy. In Australia, they're at 11.5% contribution from an employer and it's going to 12% from July next year. Yeah. Voluntary contributions from individuals make up the difference there. That level of 12% is giving pot sizes at the point of retirement, you know, 2 to 3 times what we have in the UK.
Must be nice.
It's good, but equally there's different comparisons there that I'll make. That's a private pension. The state pension in itself in Australia is means tested.
Yeah.
This government has been fairly clear. We're not means testing it.
They faced quite widespread criticism in the run-up to the budget. Yeah. And there were stories that they might.
So I think there's a real clarity over that. But there's a principle here of you get a state pension and your private pension is on top of this. So it's very different in terms of systems and how it works. What else would I say? In Australia, they've had consolidation quicker. That's come through regulation.
Is that forced consolidation? Or
It's through regulatory means, in my opinion, and performance tables. So if we take performance tables equals value for member, but purely on investment, what's the level of return that you're getting as an investor? I'll look at that as in my fiduciary duty as a trustee, and equally consumers. You and I would be sat around a barbie with a tinny. We'd look at a performance table in the same way that we might look at the league table. But we'd look at that league table and then say, this is where my particular scheme is, and it does enable an engagement. Second thing is the regulator had those powers, as we mentioned before, to say, if you're not at this threshold level, if you're not at 25 billion, if you're not at 50, then you need to consolidate. The other things around their performance tables measures, if you fail them, 1 year, you have to write out to members and say, we've failed. Second year, you're sort of out of the game, and you have to then go and merge.
Is that what they should have done with the value for money then? Are they taking too long with the 4 year sort of amber measures?
You know, the 4 year feels pretty difficult to go. It feels a long period of time to me that, and equally, how do you manifest that? How do you go through that process? Equally, on a red, amber, green principle, if I'm in red, clearly I'm misperforming. If I'm in green, then I'm great, but there's an amber there of, what do I do? And I can do that for a period of years. Australia had clear parameters that you're either in or you're out, and if you do that again, you're out. It also, rather than relying on that factor, that sort of benchmark barrier of assets under management also forces consolidation. For example, we've seen Qantas is probably one of the most recent. Exactly that. So schemes of suitable size then just say, well, we realise we can't achieve those outcomes that we need to give to members. We need to merge and go forward. There's a clear difference in the UK as well. Any transaction between providers has had a fee previously in the UK. And it would be fairly difficult for those that have built up their particular business to then say, oh yeah, I'm just going to get out of the market for free, and I'm going to merge to somewhere else. So there's a bit of a size and scale and a difference.
There are benefits to us. Wonder where the UK, what are the elements of the UK's pension market that we can hold on to and our strengths? Because you've said to me before that there are parts of it, it's not all milk and honey over in Australia.
Yeah, so I think the state pension is something that everyone trusts in that and relies on that. It's a very emotive subject as well. If you know, we've seen with the triple lock, it's part of manifesto pledges.
Yeah.
But it's a key too. It's a foundation principle. The second principle is how we build our own private pension or other pensions. I think auto enrolment has been really good. It's been really good up to 2017. We've probably been waiting a bit of time for any change to auto enrolment, allowing people in of different ages and on different band earnings. We've been waiting for a period of time. As we point out the adequacy there, we need to bump up as well.
Yeah.
What other things can we be really proud of? It's a clear system, it's clearly understandable. And I'd say one thing is different between the UK and Australia as well, and that's charges. The UK is a lower charge than Australia as well.
Yeah.
So we should be proud that we've created an industry that is, in my opinion, giving as much back to the consumer as it can.
How can they guarantee that, though, with them? Is that something that might change with the
merger? Well,
because you have pension providers, your mutuals and whatever.
No, absolutely that. And that's part of the review. That's the investment review consultation, which looks at pricing, a differential pricing that exists. Absolutely. So I do think that should be looked at and is part of consultation. Where that goes to in terms of, will we have uniform pricing? Should we have different pricing based upon employer? Absolutely needs to be in place and competitive to market. That's on the accumulation. On decumulation as well, I think we've got a plethora of retirement solutions that are available, many advised, smooth managed funds. That is different from Australia. It's a really captive market in Australia, whereas ours is a broader market where it's advised, and we're talking 1 in 10 people advised. I think that opens up a whole pleasure trove of different opportunities for consumers with funds.
Yeah. Why don't we come on to the budget then? The government, we're recording this on Tuesday, and the government are facing a bit of a headache because there's a big farmer protest planned in Westminster today. You mentioned auto-enrolment there. Have they created a rod for their own backs with some of their measures that they came through the government, notably NI contributions going up for employers, IHT on pensions as well?
So there's a question for me. I'll pick it as a round. The government will say we need clear fiscal policy that's stable for our period, our term of office.
For contributors and for the markets.
Absolutely.
As well.
So it's laying out a fiscal period, a five-year period, to say we need these increases to fund for what we need to fund for, whether that's funding NHS or it's funding infrastructure, it's funding growth or otherwise. I can see where the government is coming from to explain that. Doesn't mean it's quite emotive. A jump in NI is quite difficult for employers.
Jump as well, and then the reduction from 9,000 to 5,000.
You're absolutely right. I think employers will be looking at that and saying, it's a jump that I didn't expect. Will employers be able to cope with that jump? Will it be price differences? Will it be increases in productivity? Will it impact, you know, overall remuneration for individuals? I don't know. But it's needed in order to go forward. Is it a bad time coming on the back of COVID, coming on the cost of living crisis, coming over uncertainty of where we are right now? Yes. But I'd reflect that of we need to have those increases as a country to balance the books.
Were there other ways that they could have gone about those increases? I mean, in the run-up to the budget, for instance, there was quite a lot of wild speculation that was allowed to...
We had a field day up to the budget, didn't we? What other taxations could change, whether it be income tax as a whole, and whether we get to some sort of flat rate on taxation of pensions, equally on tax-free cash at the point of retirement. Could we change that? Could we lower it? Could we make it zero or otherwise? Yes, there's other measures. Where does it come from for me, from where Sir Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves? It's applying to those people who are working to pay for
working
the services.
People line,
The working people, I understand it, it's logical. Whether we agree with it or not, it's a clear policy that enables what we're looking for is sustainability and economic growth for 5 years. I'd rather be in a country where we're getting certainty of that growth and optimistic about that future. But I'm not saying it doesn't impact people, and equally it gives opportunity for us. We've got a good career for the next 5 years.
So
as we unpick that, but
if the NI contributions don't have to go too high, lay people off.
And we'll have advisors that will come into that and say, well, you know, for IHT, and you've spoken about farmers who are heavily impacted in that, whether that's an intended consequences and unintended consequences, it's designed at the right people. I know we debated earlier this morning of whether that's right or wrong. Yeah. The key there is advisors will be able to pick into that and help with estate planning, which will be needed for...
What are some of your advisors saying to you then, or have said to you sort of in light of the changes at the budget?
It's a change in estate planning. It's a change in what to do at the point of retirement, what choices to make at the point of retirement. If you're in a DC scheme, how do you want to take your retirement... etc. etc. Also, we've got advice guidance review that's coming up. I'm a huge fan of advisors doing their job. They do a great job, but equally where people can't afford to do that, don't really see the merit of doing that, having more guidance to enable individuals to be seeing choices that are available to them, I think will come through as well. So
potentially positive changes in 5 years' time.
I think it's potentially. It needs to go parallel with other things. We've spoken about Pensions Bill 1 and 2, that adequacy part in potential for Pensions Bill 2. We need greater funds and we need access to those funds, and we need a realisation that when we've built up a pot, how do we take a pot at the point of retirement? How do we... Absolutely that, and decumulate. This is where I think advisors come to their own. They look at smooth managed funds. Some of the difference there is emotional decision as well. Do I take an annuity because it's best value, or do I take an annuity because it gives me security and protection for my family for a period? There's a lot of mental health well-being, which is also associated with economic or mathematical decisions, which I think will be helped through advice and guidance, and is already helped through sort of advisors that are able to look at a plethora of products that are available and make the right choices. But in 5 years' time, we could see larger pots invested in particular asset classes that have grown and then continue to grow what we'd call through the spending cycle to enable the right drawdown or the right spend.
Yeah, point. I mean, the government would say that just a sort of a brief readout of the numbers, $392 billion by 2030 for the LGPS pots, $800 billion for the DC workplace schemes as well. They would say that this is good stuff for the country and not bad, and people should be patient.
Absolutely. And my particular principle will be it's a long-term investment in pensions. Mm. So long as it's giving the right outcomes and positive returns, then absolutely we can subscribe to that. It should run parallel one to another.
Yeah. And anything else from the budget that you picked out? There was perhaps less on pensions than have been trailed before, but there might be a slight impact on things like auto-enrolment.
I guess the other measures are to come.
Yeah.
The pension
part of
bill,
the pensions review.
Pension two, and then Mansion House. I think the budget gave a real fiscal economic policy and an understanding for what that would look like, and sort of personal allowance changes, when they're frozen to and when they will increase, inheritance tax, when that's frozen to and when that will increase. So it gives a certainty for a parliamentary period. I know other questions have tended to be, do we expect another similar budget and another impactful budget in the same way? No idea. I would think not.
They would hope not. Well, Rachel Reeves said in post the last budget that would be the last time she had to do similar, but that's right for this.
I'll touch wood.
Tax-free cash was something that was trailed before. Do you think that's, you mentioned there the word emotional, that was something that was trailed by a few people. They didn't actually rule it out and then it didn't come. Do you think that's something they could revisit, lowering that amount from?
I think it's something that could always be revisited. I'd say it's the one benefit that people at the point of retirement really understand.
Yeah.
I know I'm going to get that amount of tax-free cash at the point of retirement. To sort of change that gives a level of uncertainty where I think consumers are comfortable with that. Could it change in the future? Absolutely could do. What's the issue on the run-up to the budget? People thought it could change because certain levels of media or otherwise suggested it could change. Yeah. We've had it before. We've had it probably for at least 10, 15
years. Quite a bit
years.
Worse, though, this time around, wasn't it?
It was.
I think more people were taking action.
And I don't know whether that was the run-up because the budget was announced quite a lot earlier than budgets were normally allowed, so it enabled that speculation to come through.
Yeah.
Is it right that nobody came out from government to say, look, we're going to rule it out or rule it in or otherwise? We've seen the Speaker of the House say,
stop leaking the stuff to the press.
Stop leaking stuff or otherwise. So I think it's quite hard as a government to then say certain things. I do feel for those individuals that were panicked and made a decision and took their money out and are in a situation where they've got money and now don't know how to invest it.
Yeah.
Speak to your advisor. Look at different areas to be able to look at that with that pot of money. Don't leave it under the mattress unless your mattress doesn't have enough springs.
I suppose this feeds into what you mentioned about the advice guidance stuff. Where do you see the FCA and government going on that? Targeted support is the one that they're really...
Yeah, I'm a big fan of targeted support. I think we need to give more information to consumers to enable them to look at people like themselves. Like, these are the sort of decisions, these are the sort of products that you might well be able to consider. Give a little bit of a guidance. It doesn't rule out advisors. There's always a need for advisors in there. But if you can give an indication of these are the sort of considerations that you go. Up to now, most people that retire make it a binary decision. A, they retire and never go back to work. But secondly, they pick products that are one directional. I'll pick just an annuity. I'll pick just a drawdown. I'll just pick cash. That's probably not right. It doesn't meet fluctuating needs during retirement, which is for spend needs. I strongly urge people that are coming to retirement with sufficient pots to take advice and hopefully with targeted support get some guidance on how to spend their money and leave some invested for later periods of time. Equally, where there's backstops and you require certainty, you know, hit into annuities at the point where you need to give that certainty for yourself. And we won't debate the IHT principle, but for your family as well, and to leave to spouses rather than single life annuities.
Yeah, great. Mike Amery, fantastic. Thanks very much.
See you, Julian.
Cheers. You too.
Thank you.
From jet engines to space rockets, telephones to computers, the world has seen spectacular change in the last 100 years, and the pace of progress is getting faster and faster. From electric cars to the metaverse, drone deliveries to climate solutions and genetic sequencing, we're investing in the companies that are not just changing the world today, but are also shaping the future. The Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Invest in progress. Capital at risk.